Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Harry Half lived beyond two horrors of World War II, prisoner at a concentration camp, and boxing against his fellow concentration camp inmates. Half's incredible life at and post-Auschwitz will be dramatized Wednesday night through the new HBO movie, The Survivor, directed by Oscar winner Barry Levinson. Writer Justine Yule Gilmer joins me next in an interradio exclusive live from Morocco. A podiatrist's life can take many turns, as TLC proves weekly on My Feet Are Killing Me. You'll hear how next hour from senior executive producer Mike Kane and one of the two podiatrists profiled, Dr. Brad himself, Dr. Brad Schaefer. Also ahead, Roku takes a deep dating dive, Ken Burns' next PBS event, and our new classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. I present on Spotify, the iRadio Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Reason, and Verbal. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get a free book with all the good stuff when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. And wherever you are on this Monday afternoon, last one of April 2022, we welcome you to this special 90-minute edition of the program about TV's current and future. We have some wonderful guests in store for you over that time span, and we invite you to be part of this program. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the world, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. We have our chat room alive and well for you. It's happening. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, and we invite you to use it. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Speaker, TuneIn screen. Follow the instructions to be live with you. 52 degrees at the top of the hour, and live from Morocco, Justine Yule Gilmer from The Survivor will join us after these news notes. Love is blooming, unscripted fashion, on Roku. With one action, the smart TV device and operating system has started work on two series and a 90-minute special, all with dating or romantic relationship aspects. Boat Rocker Media will offer the Marriage Pact, where longtime singles must fulfill or break a marriage promise. The Miami-based dating scene is locale of Match Me in Miami, an all-four media effort. The 90-minute special, To Paris for Love, deals with three friends looking for amour while on a two-week excursion through the neighborhoods of Paris. It's a co-production of Reese Witherspoon's Hello Sunshine and Zoe Saldana's company, Sinistar. Ken Burns has lined up his next PBS unscripted project. The U.S. and the Holocaust will explore what was done and not done in response to this World War II catastrophe. CBS will run the Chronicle over three successive nights, starting on September 18th. Now, quickies before our first guest, Fremantle will organize a group of scripted series adapted from graphic fiction released by AWA Studios. AWA stands for Artists, Writers, and Artesians, a collective of former Marvel Comics employees. Irma Vep, the long-awaited HBO miniseries offshoot of Olivia Assayas' 1996 movie, will premiere on June 6th. Here's a pair of reunion specials ahead, The Real Housewives of New Jersey on Bravo May 3rd, with Netflix serving up a selling sunset get-together 2 days later. And former broadcaster, newscaster, and 1970s Today program host Jim Hart has passed away. Hart, who later hosted PBS series Innovation and Over Easy, won 5 Emmy Awards during his career. Hart was 82. And that's news notes for today. And now joining us in an interview exclusive live from Morocco, the writer of the new HBO movie that premieres this Wednesday night, The Survivor, Justine Yule Gilmer. Justine, welcome.
Thank you so much. Such a pleasure to be on.
What do you think about this topic, this extraordinary person, and the movie you put together about that person?
that's a really great and very a good question that could have a very long answer. But look, this is a movie that I started writing towards the end of 2015. You know, we finished shooting it in 2019. Obviously, the world has gone through tremendous change since then. So I'm just absolutely thrilled that finally the story is coming to light, that it's going to be on April 27th, and Harry Half's story will finally be told.
How did you learn about Half's life, and especially, and not just what he went through at Auschwitz, but the aftermath of that time in that concentration camp?
Yeah, so Harry Haft had three children, and his oldest son, Alan, wrote a book about him. And Harry, you know, like a lot of Holocaust survivors, didn't talk a lot about what happened to him in the camps and what happened to him during the war. But eventually he told his son, and Alan wrote a book called Harry Haft, The Survivor of Auschwitz. And so that was brought to me as a writer, and I was asked if this was something I would be interested in writing, if I felt that I could connect with the material and connect with Harry and find a way to bring this man's true story to a feature rather than a documentary, you know, to truly bring it to life and to tell his story in a way that would do it justice within this fictional medium.
Of all the Holocaust tales that have been dramatically told, both in television and film, I believe this is the first one where it illuminates a practice that was done at Auschwitz, this idea of the people in the camp boxing each other for the benefit of the commandants or the keepers of the camp, if you will. When you heard about that, what was your first reaction?
Yeah, look, I believe there have been a couple of smaller movies in the past that have kind of touched on this subject material. But yeah, this was certainly something that I was unaware of. And, you know, one of the reasons why I felt connected to this material from the beginning was from a purely like one way of getting in there was that boxing was my sport. And so I felt that I could really tell that side of the story very realistically. And the other one was that my maternal grandmother was a member of the Danish underground resistance in World War II. So I had grown up knowing about the Holocaust, being sort of a student of history, really researching it, being interested in it, being, you know, determined in some way to kind of continue the storytelling. But when I heard about, you know, Harry and other men like him, but particularly Harry, being forced to box for entertainment, and in this case, you know, the opponents that he faced would be killed by the SS, I knew it was a complexity to the story of the camps that we hadn't really explored before. And certainly at the time that it was brought to me, there were not a lot of movies or stories told about these kind of shades of grey, about the Jewish people who were forced into doing terrible things to other Jews in order to survive, and what that meant as they continued their lives post-Holocaust, post-war, and the kind of the trauma that they carried with them.
Mm-hmm. Was this idea of boxing a practice just in Auschwitz, or did this extend to Dachau and other concentration camps?
Yeah, it was in a couple of other camps, and, you know, often it was just because the SS guards were bored. This was a way for them to make money. They could bet on Jewish prisoners, and obviously they saw these men as extremely disposable. So it was kind of like watching, you know, roosters fighting or dogs baiting, which is, you know, obviously horrific. But it was not a common practice, and Harry's story is quite unique within it because of, as told through Harry's memories told to his son Alan, who wrote the book, he and the German officer, the Nazi officer who kind of took him and made him into this fighter in the camp, had this very sort of strange, traumatic, symbiotic relationship. And that was something that I wanted to explore as well in the script and in the film.
Mm-hmm. In putting the script together, how much research did you do in partnership with organizations that deal with the Holocaust? For example, I understand that the USC Shoah Foundation, which, by the way, is going to have a special event the night that HBO premieres this film, we'll talk more about that a little later on, that they had a great contribution in the making of the movie.
They did, yeah. In the beginning, you know, when it's the early stages of the script, especially a script that, you know, doesn't come with an enormous studio behind it, it's as a writer, it can be kind of a lonely process. But for me, it was incredibly important to get as much detail right, as, you know, to be as accurate as humanly possible. And so I spent, you know, the entire time that I took writing the script, which was probably a year and a half by the time it got to the stage where it was ready to go out and was listed on the Hollywood sort of blacklist, which is actually a good thing, which is the list of the best unproduced screenplays of that year. I probably spent, you know, every day that I would write, I would research as well. And so when you are not only looking at incredibly detailed facts like, you know, what kind of doors were used in the Auschwitz-Birkenau death chambers and the gas chambers. You know, you look at that, you look at the footage from the liberation of Dachau. You know, I spent an enormous amount of time looking at that because I knew that this writing this film was both an enormous responsibility and an enormous honor. And so I wanted to get it as right as possible. Once the film had sort of caught the attention of Barry Levinson and it moved towards more of the production side, then it became, you know, even more important to bring on these bigger partners and these, you know, this wealth of information like the Shoah Foundation and the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., to really ensure the accuracy of everything that we could do on screen. You know, it's a fictional film. There are liberties that we had to take in order to tell the story in a complete way within 2 hours instead of a documentary. But we really worked very, very hard. Everybody worked so hard across the entire production to make sure it was as accurate as possible.
The Survivor, directed by Barry Levinson, starring Ben Foster in the role of actual Holocaust survivor Harry Haft. It premieres this Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on HBO. We'll also be seen later on HBO Max. And we are live from Morocco with the writer of the movie, Justine Yule Gilmer. She joins us live this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. We are delighted you are joining us as well. Simon Happ, I'm with you live from New York, 52 degrees at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for our guest? Don't be shy. You call in 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Happ 04 by name. First of three episodes we're doing this week to wrap up April 2022. Coming up on Wednesday, we'll have a special edition for you. And joining us will be the co-founder and chief executive officer of an organization that's trying to encourage more advertisers to do their thing on smart TV plumbing services. His name is Jason Fairchild. The company is called TV Scientific. They just got $20 million in funding. We'll talk about how he sees advertising happening on smart TV plumbing services through smart TV sets and devices, the role interactive TV may play in advertising and shopping as well. That's all coming up Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. You mentioned, Justine, that you started writing this film in 2015.
Tell
us about the journey it took from when you started putting this story to paper to getting it on HBO.
That's a great question. So, yeah, we started, I sort of pitched on it and started writing in 2015. And feature films take a while. I did a couple of drafts with the help of producer Scott Pardo. And it got to the stage where we were happy for it to go out. We knew that it was time. And this was when Maddie Leshem, who is the main producer of this film, who is himself the son of a man who survived the Holocaust and the grandson of a woman who did not. And so when Maddie came on board and we started looking for directors, we knew it was extremely important to find the right fit for this and to find someone who would understand every facet of kind of the Jewish experience and also of that time period. So, you know, obviously Barry Levinson is an extraordinary talent and his past work speaks for itself. But Barry, you know, Barry himself, when he came on board, he talked about why the script and the story touched him, and he's, you know, he's spoken about it in other interviews, but in a nutshell, what he was saying is that he had a great uncle, I believe a great uncle who had survived the Holocaust and came to stay with them when he was a little boy, and he would wake up screaming in the night. And so eventually Barry learnt this story, and it stayed with him. And so this is why he felt very, very connected. So I think that all of us were in this place of going, this story is so important, it needs to be told. Obviously, Holocaust stories are, excuse me, not the most cheerful subject matter, not necessarily something that people can't wait to see. It's not like going to see the new Marvel movie, but it was a story that was absolutely vital to tell and be told. So once Barry came on board, then, of course, there was more and more interest, and Bronze Studios came on board, and we started shooting the film. And the film was shot during 2018 and 2019, so by the time that it was sort of edited, ready to go out, looking for distributors, COVID hit. And so it was pushed back. And honestly, I think there were times where we were all unsure whether it would ever see the light of day, particularly, you know, again, in the midst of a global pandemic that was so devastating, is a story that is inherently, you know, very sad and quite heavy, however kind of truthful and uplifting in parts? Was that something that people would want to see? Is that something that networks or theatrical distributors would take a chance on? And we were, you know, it got into the Toronto Film Festival last year, and happily HBO Max, you know, HBO saw it and decided it was something that they really wanted to get behind. And they've been absolutely extraordinary in surely seeing the vision of this film and why it was such an important story to tell. And so this is where we find ourselves in a couple of days' time. It's finally going to be seen, and I hope it touches everyone who watches it. It's a really special story.
When you were crafting the film, writing the script, how much, what was sort of your challenge in terms of capturing this person's life, not just his life in a concentration camp, but also the life afterwards? Because in watching the trailer for the film, which you can see on YouTube, there seems to be as much about his life post his Holocaust experience as much as the actual experience in Auschwitz.
Absolutely. And, you know, in the beginning, this is one of the things that the producers were struggling in finding a writer because, you know, a person's life, whether it spans, you know, the actual story spans 20 years, 5 years, whatever it is, always very complex. And so you had to find a way to kind of get into what it meant or what the story truly was, where it was not just about someone who went through the camps. And so for me, the great challenge was, A, figuring out, you know, what was the shape of the story? What was I trying to say? What was the kind of core or theme for me? And then, of course, what to leave out and what needed to be adjusted slightly historically in order to tell the story. So I came at this recognizing that this was a story across the movie of a man who had suffered tremendous trauma and was effectively going through an elongated PTSD breakdown. And I think that's something that, you know, is not just Holocaust-specific, but kind of reaches out across many cultures and many people's experiences. What was also important to me was to acknowledge something that I think is not often acknowledged in a lot of Holocaust stories or survivor stories that we see on film and television, which is just because you survived, it didn't mean that the trauma ended and that there was generational trauma that came from the people who have been through this horrific experience. And it didn't matter, you know, it doesn't mean that it's all darkness. It just means that there has to be an acknowledgement that the end of the war or surviving doesn't mean it's over. And so looking at Harry's story, I had to find a way to tell that version of it or to tell that shape of it, but also find a way to get into basically a way to tell the story of a man who, like a lot of Holocaust survivors, didn't talk about what he went through. So one of the breakthroughs, one of my early breakthroughs as a writer, was creating a character of a journalist who wanted to interview him and offered to make him famous. You know, and you see through the trailer that Harry starts to fight in America because he wants to find the girl that he was in love with before the war. And so this journalist character was a way, kind of a storytelling method to make Harry open up and move the plot along so that we could pull in all of these truthful events that happened during his time in America and make it a cohesive story. So that was one really big challenge, was trying to find a way to be able to fictionalize certain aspects of his life but keep very, very true to the man himself, what he had been through, and what he continued to go through after the war.
You're hearing Justine Yule Gilmer. She is the writer of the new HBO movie, The Survivor. It premieres this Wednesday night, 8 p.m. East Pacific time on HBO. Then will be seen later on HBO Max. She joins us live from Morocco this half hour in an NRA-exclusive interview here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tom, I'm with you live from New Haven, York. And if you have a question or comment in my remaining minutes with Justine, don't be shy. Raise your voice and use this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. We have a great hour in store for you Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised. First up, we'll meet somebody who once was an actress. In fact, she had a co-starring role in the 1990s on Beverly Hills 90210. She is now being acclaimed for her first work as a TV series creator, writer, and producer. Her name is Kathleen Robinson, and the show is Swimming with Sharks. It premiered on Roku earlier this month as getting rave reviews. Kathleen Robertson will be our lead guest. And then you'll meet a talk show host and executive producer who is now taking her show to the country. It started here in New York on WLNY, the CBS's station, either Channel 10 or 55, depending on where you are. And now the program is being presented in syndication on other TV stations and on Hulu. Her name is Marcy Hopkins. The show on weekends is called Wake Up with Marcy, and she'll be with us as well. 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And I believe we have a call. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. Whoop, call just left. Try again, 646-652-2906, and we'll get you aboard. While we wait for that call to come back, Justine, where was the Survivor filmed? And during the filming, did you have a chance to go on site, see Barry Levinson, see Ben Foster? And what was your thoughts about if you did get that chance to see your words being captured on camera?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was filmed in 2018 and 2019, and I did get a chance to go on set in New York. And look, it's I've been working in the industry as a writer for 16 years, and you know it never ever gets old going on set and you know seeing your words come to life. And you know, like in television, I'm an executive producer. I'm like, well, my current show, I'm effectively the vice president, the showrunner. So I'm heavily involved from sort of beginning to end in television and features, you know, just a different system. So I got to go on set in New York. I got to see it come to life. I got to see Ben Foster and performing as this man who had lived in my head for years. And it was absolutely stunning. And, you know, and Barry and I worked very closely together in the initial stages of when he came on. We worked together for about 6 months crafting the script into this, get it more production ready. And so it was, you know, incredibly moving, especially given New York was Harry's hometown when he came to America. We were literally filming in the area that he lived, and so that felt very special, and I got to meet some of his children and his grandchildren, so everything became very, very real from again.
I noticed that the concentration camp scenes are in black and white, mm-hmm. and the scenes post are in color. Who made that call, you or Barry or somebody else?
That was Barry Levinson, and look, I think it's a brilliant call. You know, I believe, and Barry or Maddie, the producer, can speak to this more clearly than I can. But I believe that there was a little bit of discussion. There really was a consideration about whether it made it too much like Schindler's List, or it was, you know, the correct choice because it in some ways that you were able to view the brutality of the camps and the horror of the camps at a slight distance from it. And of course, the storytelling version of being able to say, well, once Harry escaped the camp and escaped the past, then his future was in color. So I think it was an incredibly clever decision, and it works very beautifully in the film.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope, above all else, for people watching your movie mm-hmm. to know about the Holocaust, about World War II, about this extraordinary human being, what do you want them to take away?
Well, I think on the most basic level, I think that it's certainly not a new idea, but it is, if we don't remember the past, we're doomed to repeat the mistakes. And we are certainly seeing that all over the world. We're seeing it in Ukraine. We're seeing it with the rise of anti-Semitism all across the world. And, I can't quite remember the exact figure, but I've heard anywhere between, I think, 40% and 60% of American high schoolers either don't know that the Holocaust existed or don't believe it happened. And we still have survivors alive now. You know, this is living memory. We have their children. We have their grandchildren. We have, endless interviews. So I think on its most basic level, I would like people to come away keeping these survivors like Harry Haft in their memories and with the hope that, that this stops this kind of genocide from happening again. That is it. That's the most important lesson for me. I do think also I would love people to come away from watching this movie who perhaps already have a knowledge of the Holocaust or a connection to the Holocaust in getting to understand who Harry was and the choices he made, which are not savory. You know, that there is a lot of contention about what he did and whether it was a selfish choice, and certainly within himself that was a cause of a lot of trauma about whether what he did was right in these camps. And so I think understanding those shades of grey in him and the decisions that these people were forced to make every day in the camps, and perhaps see it with more nuance is also really important to me.
Mm-hmm. Before we wrap this segment, I want to let you know that also on Wednesday, in addition to the premiere of The Survivor on HBO, that the USC Shoah Foundation is having a special event that we present on YouTube. It is a conversation with director Barry Levinson, with the actor who plays Harry Halfpenny Foster, and also the moderator Sammy Sage, who's the co-founder of an organization called Betches. She's also the granddaughter of a Holocaust survivor. If you want more details about this event, which will be presented on YouTube live on Wednesday, you can go to rebooting.com/survivor. That's rebooting.com/survivor. And again, the event will be presented on YouTube live also on Wednesday, in addition to the premiere of The Survivor, which, by the way, will be running throughout the month on HBO, and then we'll replay on HBO Max. Before we go, Justine, are you working on any other TV projects?
Yes, I mean, I'm currently working on Wheel of Time for Amazon, which is a big fantasy series, and I have quite a few features in the pipeline as well, so I feel very, very lucky to continue doing exactly what I love.
How have you found doing Wheel of Time? It's gotten very, very good feedback, very good reviews, going to a second season, and certainly it's a total shift for you in terms of writing, because it goes from historical fact to fantasy fiction.
You know, doing these kind of projects is why, you know, I'm Australian. I started out my career in Australia, and certainly I got to the point in Australia where I craved doing bigger stories, more genre stories, and, you know, my passions were historical fiction, period, and, you know, sort of big epic fantasy or sci-fi. So I feel very fortunate I get to do both of these. And I think the connection between the two of them, because you're right, it is in some respects a tonal shift. The connection between the two of them is big world-building storytelling and big kind of epic stories. And, you know, in some respects, a horrible thing to talk about the Holocaust as an epic story, but it is a sprawling story to tell, and being able to focus on very interesting characters within it. So, you know, for me, Wheel of Time has been spectacular. I love being able to play within that world and to play within the budget and the cast that we have and the kind of storytelling we can do. But it's also so wonderful that I get to have the fun in that world, and then I get to do stories like The Survivor, which are so vital to tell, you know, and I hope that everybody gets to see it and appreciate it in that way.
The Survivor, directed by Barry Levinson, written by our guest Justine Yule Gilmer, and starring Ben Foster as Holocaust survivor Harry Haft. It premieres this Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, on HBO. Check your local listing where HBO is in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program, HBO.com. And remember, it will be playing with the next few weeks after its premiere, and it will also be running on HBO Max, available on smart TV sets and smart TV devices, and in some markets also available through your local cable operator. The Survivor, premiering this Wednesday night on HBO. Justine Yule Gilmer, the writer, thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on making this film with everyone involved. And hope, and I have a hunch that in a few months around Emmy Award time, we might be hearing more from you and your fellow cast and crew there.
Thank you so much, Tom. It's been an absolute pleasure.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you so much, and all the best to you, and again, everybody involved in the making of this very, very important movie. Justine, take care. Enjoy the rest of the week.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Justine Yule Gilmer joining us live from Morocco. When we come back, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week. We'll have The People from My Feet Are Killing Me, now in its third season on TLC. That's senior executive producer Mike Kane, and also one of the two podiatrists involved in this program, Dr. Brad himself, Dr. Brad Schaefer. And we'll also have a comment about, yes, there's a new Academy Award controversy, and it deals with what Liza Minnelli was involved with giving out the Best Picture Award. We'll explain all of that and where we stand with that controversy. That's all coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You're connected to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. 9 to 9, 10 Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on BTR. It's Gospel Gold, the best of gospel music, interviews, and a whole lot more. Gospel Gold comes your way tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget, Best BTR coming your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half hour of our 90-minute edition coming your way this Monday here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Sami Abban with you live from New York. Coming up at the top of the hour, we'll be joined by the people behind the popular TLC series, My Feet Are Killing Me. Senior executive producer Mike Kane will join us live from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. And Dr. Brad himself, one of the two podiatrists that you find on this series, Dr. Brad Shaker. And also coming up, we'll have our classic trivia question of the week and a comment about what may be, yes, there is another Academy Award controversy. And no, it's not about the slap around the world. It's about, well, where Liza Minnelli was or may not have been when she gave the Best Picture Award at the end of the night. We'll get to all of that, but first we have some words from our fine sponsor, Audible.com. Who do you think is the world's greatest detective? Well, here's a nominee, the one and only Sherlock Holmes, written by the great Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. And yes, you can get a collection of his most finest cases, accompanied by Dr. Watson, in a wonderful Sherlock Holmes audiobook narrated by the terrific actor, Stephen Fry. It's all yours when you become a one-month trial runner of Audible.com. In case you don't know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and inspiration. There's more than 250,000 titles to choose from, and you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, Spotify, all of our podcast affiliates. All you have to do is sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. And what do you get for that? One free audio book, a one-month trial for you or someone you love, great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com, and yes, important health and wellness information that could make a big difference for you or someone you know. Now, here's the great news, or greater news as the case may be. If you are already an Amazon Prime member, you get two audiobooks for your trial of one, and you can get to pick from the growing catalog for that second book of Audible Originals. We're talking original audio productions, podcast series, best of Broadway, off-Broadway, and regional theater, great one-woman and one-man shows, and a whale of a lot more. And you might even be able to get a discount as well if you do become a member of Audible.com. So how about making today the day you start listening to the good stuff and hearing how Audible.com can transform the way you hear the world? It's so easy. For all details, just go one place, audibletrial.com/televised. And yes, it makes a great gift any time of the year for you or someone you love. Well, now it's time for our regular feature, the classic trivia question of the week. We're going for our second weekly winner in a row, and we have a brand new prize. It's the best-selling book that we highlighted on this show earlier this month, Binge Time, written by two of the best people to cover the world of TV, Dade Hayes and John Chmielewski. And again, Binge Time just came out last Wednesday, gotten very good reviews, wonderful feedback on social media, and I haven't had a chance to see the book yet, and I'm hearing a lot of great things about it. And we're offering it as a prize, so listen up. You could be our second weekly winner in a row if you know the answer to this question. What are the great actors who had a long career in television and starred or co-starred in many TV series along the way was Robert Conrad? Here's the question. What was Robert Conrad's first television series? We're talking about the first series that he starred or co-starred in, not as a guest shot, starred or co-starring. What was Robert Conrad's first television series? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget, when you email, enclose your name and where you're from, your mailing address, as long with your answer. And if you've already won prizes, if you've already been one of our previous winners, no, you're not eligible for this one, all right? Once again, here's the question. What was Robert Conrad's first television series? If you know the answer, go right ahead and email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. simonapple04@yahoo.com. First with the correct answer, you win the new best-selling book about where TV is at and where it's going, Binge Times by Dawn Chmielewski and Dade Hayes. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, we will post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum and Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's UBC Simon TWBT. As we say around here, in order to win, play in. Don't be shy. You never know. You could be our second weekly winner in a row. And, of course, all the very best. And now, before we have our next pair of guests, we have a comment. I'm sure that a lot of people, and I mean a lot of people, are tired of hearing about controversy over this year's Academy Awards ceremony televised by ABC. And I'm sure that you're very, 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 if not totally blown over, totally like, please, no more talk about Will Smith, Chris Rock, and the slap heard around the world. Well, this commentary is not about that. It's about something that allegedly happened after the slap heard around the world. And also, what hasn't been said about it, as well as what has been said to this point. As some of you know, if you saw the Academy Award, the Best Picture Award, which this year was the last award given on the program, not the next to last or sometime earlier, was given out by Liza Minnelli and Lady Gaga. When the spotlight went on stage at the Dolby Theater on both of them, Liza was in a wheelchair. She looked very, very uncomfortable. She looked like she did not want to be at the event. And I mentioned when I did my Oscar review on this program that it was very tough to watch and very sad to watch Minnelli, who is one of the most vivacious entertainers ever, and a woman who has in her lifetime done the very rare deal of winning all four of the major award show honors, Grammy, Tony, Oscar, Emmy, being in that position. And it was wonderful to see how Lady Gaga was able to put Liza at ease, because she looked like she was not, just being with her, classy, and saying, you know, we're going to get through, we're going to get to this, we're going to get through it, lean on me, we're great, we're good to go. And it was. And it was a wonderful moment. Well, that moment, according to a story that was published last week in The Wrap, the entertainment news website, and presented by Michael Feinstein, the friend of Liza Minnelli and the popular cabaret performer here in New York and elsewhere around the country, on a podcast, suggested otherwise, that that situation didn't happen. Stay with me. Here's what was said by Feinstein and presented last week in The Wrap. When Liza Minnelli was invited to give out the Best Picture Award, she requested to the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences and the people putting together the telecast, I've got back problems. I would like to do the event sitting in a director's chair, because that's how I feel comfortable. And allegedly, according to the Wrap story, which was taken from the Feinstein podcast, which, by the way, if you go to the Wrap website, see the story, you will see the Feinstein podcast. You can click onto it. Feinstein said that's what happened. The Academy agreed to have her sit in the director's chair. Feinstein says that he was at the event. He was backstage with Minnelli. And that a few minutes before Minnelli was supposed to go on with Lady Gaga, and keep in mind that this was after 11:30 Eastern time, the show was already over a half hour, that somebody either from the Academy or ABC or Will Packer, the executive producer and his production team, came up backstage to Minnelli and said, you have to do this in a wheelchair. Basically saying to Minnelli, we're flip-flopping. We're flip-flopping on the fly. You have to be in that chair. And according to Feinstein, Minnelli refused. She basically yet reminded this person, this is what you agreed to. You, your organization agreed that I would do this in the director's chair. That's how I feel comfortable. You agreed to my request. And after a few seconds, this person, again, we don't know where this person came from or who gave the order, said to Minnelli, you either do it in the wheelchair or you don't go on. You're out. Minnelli took a breath or two and then agreed to do it rather than be booted out of the event before the spotlight was supposed to go on both Minnelli, her, and Lady Gaga. And what you saw, if you were watching, with what you saw. And, of course, Feinstein expressed his displeasure at what he witnessed. The rap went with the story after contacting both the Academy's press people and Minnelli's press people. And they put the story on the website with the note that as of the time it was being posted, nobody had responded back. And indeed, that is still the case. As of this very moment, on Monday afternoon, the 25th of April, 2022, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, ABC, Will Packer's production team, and Minnelli's representatives have not responded with any statement whatsoever about this incident or this alleged incident. I, however, went ahead and did a Facebook post on this. And I noted that if, in fact, this had happened, that this was a insensitive, inexcusable act, and it showcased incompetency on the part of somebody or some organization. Well, I'm delighted to say that we had a lot of response to that post. The majority of it was a big yes, yeah, right on, or to that degree. And there was one person who gave me a very long reply that totally contradicted Feinstein's account of what happened, and basically saying Minnelli was all set to go in the wheelchair. And that this was basically a made-up story. Well, I responded to this person, who I will not name, and I said, thank you for the post. Thank you for the reply. I appreciate what your account. And I said that somebody, the Academy, ABC, Packer, Minnelli's organization, or Minnelli rep, needs to say something about this, needs to clear the air, either confirm what Feinstein said on that podcast and the rap reported, or deny it, or give it, or give their account of what happened. And the person responded back and said, no, they shouldn't. Why should they respond? Why should this person's argument was, why should they respond to an event that didn't happen? Now, originally I was going to talk on Friday's episode about this, but I wanted to give it a little bit of thought over the weekend. So now that I have given the thought, here it is. Yes, somebody needs to say something. Here's why. Right now, the Academy Awards are on shaky ground. Very shaky ground. Because there are a lot of people who either saw the Oscars or heard about what happened at the Oscars, and they are left with a bad taste. They're left with a bad taste about not only the Chris Rock, Will Smith situation, but about everything from the awards that were given out an hour before and clumsily edited into the broadcast. They're upset about how certain segments that were supposed to be salutes to various films, milestone films, like the James Bond movies or The Godfather, how they were handled. For example, the extreme sports athletes rather than former James Bond or players in those movies doing the honors, or the how the Godfather clips were done with a hip-hop soundtrack, with Francis Ford Coppola, the director, certainly listening or watching from the stage. to the fact that one of the nominated best songs was not performed, to the song from Encanto that had the lyrics that sounded stupid, that didn't need to be, that were reworked for the telecast, that really didn't need to be, and were done without many people knowing, and of course, how Liza Minnelli looked in that wheelchair. And while the Oscars did have a bump in ratings, it left a lot of people with a bad taste, a very bad taste. And you can make the argument that in ABC's decision early this month to put Dancing with the Stars, move it from their network to Disney Plus this fall, could serve as a warning sign to the Academy about the future of the Oscars on broadcast television. Basically saying, this is fair warning. If you screw up again next year, if the ratings go down, if you embarrass us with the kind of ceremony you've done the last 2 years, we have no qualms about taking your show off. After all, we bankroll you. Did you know that a lot of the funding for the Academy of Motion Arts and Sciences, what they do every year, Oscars and beyond, is provided by ABC and the sponsors of ABC Telecast? So one could make the argument that the Dancing with the Stars was a warning shot to the Academy. I'd like to offer the idea that the last thing that the Academy and the Oscars need right now is another controversy to answer for, and that they don't answer. So I would like to make the suggestion that it's time for somebody to speak up and say something. If what Michael Feinstein said on that podcast was incorrect, was a lie, say so. If what he said on that podcast and what the rap reported was in fact correct, say so. And do it now. Don't let this thing linger. And to Liza Minnelli's press reps, however this went down, say something. Don't let this situation linger. The worst thing you can do right now is keep this controversy alive by not saying anything. The sooner you say something, the sooner this gets resolved. Somebody needs to say something. Even if you think this whole situation was made up, say something. Get on to the rap. Talk to the Variety. Talk to Hollywood Reporter. Talk to our show. And say something. Put out a statement. Put out a video statement. Answer what has been reported. And if this, in fact, did not happen, then we can move on. And if it did happen, then there needs to be some reprimanding. Somebody needs to be held accountable for this. Whether it is somebody from the Academy, somebody from ABC, somebody from Will Packer's production company, somebody. And I would suggest that if this did happen, A, the person that approached Minnelli with the order should be reprimanded, and the person that gave the order backstage should be reprimanded. The longer this goes on, the more suspicious people are going to get about what did and did not take place before that Best Picture award was given out by Liza Minnelli and Lady Gaga. So I would suggest somebody get on the horn with an entertainment press writer, sooner the better. And then maybe everybody can move on to the goal of making sure, of ensuring that what took place the last 2 years of the Academy Award does not repeat itself again next spring. If it does, it could be the last straw. And in 2024, the Academy Awards might not be on ABC, where it's been for decades, but on Hulu or Netflix or Amazon somewhere, and not ABC. Academy Award people, it's in your court. We'll leave what you do to you. I'd certainly like to hear what you have to say. So if you like, take the next few minutes and give me a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. Numbers good anywhere you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. Or you can put our chat room to work. It's SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. I'd love to hear from you. Whatever you think, whatever you want to say, whatever your thoughts, love to hear them. We appreciate it, and we'll go from there. And I believe we have a caller. Let's take that call. Hello, you're on Swabby Televised. What's your name, and where are you calling from? Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing? It's Dr. Schaefer. I'm calling to talk to you in, I think, 10 minutes.
Absolutely. Well, actually, we've got you on the air right now, so let's keep you on. Dr. Schaefer from the TLC series, My Feet Are Killing Me. Dr. Schaefer, it's great to have you with us. Where are you calling from?
How you doing, buddy? I'm calling from New York City.
Great to meet you, and great to have you on the program. First of all, why do you think, and by the way, the senior executive producer, Mike King, will be joining us in a few minutes. He'll be calling us from the nation's capital. This program has, in a very unique way, gotten a following. It's now its third season. Why do you think this program and your involvement in it has tickled a lot of people's fancy about what you do as a podiatrist?
You know, that's a good question. You know, I think with the rise of Dr. Pimple Popper, you know, she really grew in popularity with showing things that, you know, are extreme, satisfying, sometimes disgusting, but ultimately it's people that have a problem that, you know, really have had no answers and didn't know that there were too many answers out there until it was showcased on TV. And with all of her empathy and the way she went about it, I think people were kind of looking for what's next. And feet are just as wild and sometimes gross and sometimes even sexy. So why not showcase what feet are all about?
It seems over the decades that the TLC has had a very interesting way of showcasing very unusual slices of life, whether it is large families, whether it is dwarfs who have really made a little people big world, and your case shows about medical oddities and the people who deal with them, like Dr. Pimple Popper and like what you and your colleague does on this program. Why do you think that's so?
You know, TLC has showcased a lot of stuff. You know, you have 600-pound you know, sisters are talking about, you know, Mormons and how their life is and how beautiful, you know, some stuff that not a lot of people understand can be. And it's educating the public on all of these wild things and hopefully normalizing some of it to an extent to where not a lot of people's minds will go.
Tell us about your career in this field. How did you get into it? And then we'll get into how TLC and you connected.
Sure, and that's something that I think Mike can talk about also. But, you know, what I was trying to do when I got out of residency is, you know, really just showcase a lot of, you know, the normal ways that a doctor can be, health, wellness, fitness, you know, going out, socializing, and, you know, not being so buttoned up. And, you know, in doing so, I gained a nice following on social media like Instagram. And a lot of people, it seemed to relate to what I was saying. You know, I've had failures in life. I've gone through struggles just like everyone. And I was very open and honest to talk about them. So in doing so, and with the rise of Dr. Pimple Popper, when people were looking for, you know, your average everyday foot doctor. I think, you know, I came across their plate a little bit. And, you know, because it, what I'm told is I was relatable and, you know, had a good message. And, you know, I'd like to think I'm pretty good at what I do also. So, you know, it was a good marriage there.
And now joining us live from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital, is the senior executive producer of TLC series My Feet Are Killing Me, Mike Cain. Mike, welcome in. And he should be popping up any momento. Hang on, everybody, for a second. I'll tell you what, while we wait for Mike to get aboard, how did you two hook up?
I met Mike during one of the filming episodes of My Feet Are Killing Me, I think season one. I was treating a guy that had a crazy bunion deformity, really awesome story, and Mike was kind of overseeing some things. So that was my first introduction to Mike. As far as his team at Renegade Productions and TLC, I've met them over the course of these four seasons. And everyone's been absolutely amazing, just super professional and, you know, realize that, you know, there's a lot of people out there that can relate to what we're doing on the show. And it's extremely important. I'm happy to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. You are hearing Dr. Brad Schaefer. He is Dr. Brad of My Feet Are Killing Me. It's the popular TLC series now in its third season. And by the way, the latest episode will be running this Thursday night, 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. We are awaiting Mike Cain. He is the senior executive producer of the program. He will join us live from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., in a few moments. And if you have a question or comment for both of our guests from the same series, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Freaker and TuneIn Radio. We've also got our chat room going. It is SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will get you involved. And coming up on our second and third episodes of this week, our second episode is a special edition on Wednesday. We will have Jason Fairchild. He is the co-founder and chief executive officer of TV Scientific. It's an organization that got $20 million in funding recently to try to support more advertising on smart TV sets, devices, and programming services. And coming up Friday on the program, we will have, from the brand-new Roku series, Swimming with Sharks, based on the 1990s movie starring Kevin Spacey, the creator and showrunner, former actress, now behind the scenes, Kathleen Robertson. And from the popular talk show here in New York on weekends and now around the country through Hulu and other broadcast stations, Wake Up with Marcy, Marcy Hopkins. It's all coming up Wednesday and Friday here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. And before the top of the hour, let's see if Mike Cain is finally with us. I know we've had some issues getting him through the phone and over to you. Let's see if we finally can get him. Mike, are you there? All right, hang in there, Mike. We are going to try to get you. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to take you offline. Call back again, 646-652-2906, and we will get you. After we do the, what they call the station ID break, or web ID break, as we like to say. So we're going to have Mike. We will keep Dr. Brad Schaefer on, and we hope to have you on as well. So stay with us. We'll have our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, but first we're going to pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching nearly 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out Laurie and Company tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern. That's noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, Laurie and Company, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget Best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abbott with you live from New Web, New York. Good to have you with us. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour, 52 degrees at the top of the hour. This is the ProBot TV's Current and Future, 90-minute edition on this final Monday of April 2022. And if a question or comment for our guests that are currently with us, and they're from the TLC series My Feet Are Killing Me, now in its third season on that channel, give us a call, 646-652-2906, 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio. And if you're shy about the phone, use the chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find us at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Finally joining us from the nation's capital of Washington, D.C., the senior executive producer of My Theater Killing Me, Mike Kane. Mike, great to have you with us at last.
Simon, you got me?
Yes, I do.
There we go. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. And also rejoining us, with us live from New York, Dr. Brad Schaefer, one of the two podiatrists who are the subjects of your series. Dr. Brad, welcome back in.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Mike, I asked Dr. Brad before the break, TLC, your network, the network that you you produce for, has had this very interesting ability to showcase unique slices of life over the course of the decades of existence, everything from small people and how they're dealing with life, like Little People, Big World, all the shows dealing with large families, and also these shows about medical odysseys like Dr. Pimple Popper and yours. Why do you think these type of shows dealing with medical odysseys have found an audience?
I think it's a combination of curiosity, for sure. Like, you know, some of these ailments that I've seen on My Feet Are Killing Me, I've never heard of before we started working on the show. But I also think it's also about the heart that we do on the show. You know, we go to great lengths to, you know, make sure that this isn't just a show about feet. It's about people with feet ailments or, you know, conditions like that. So you meet the patients, you meet their loved ones, you see how the condition is affecting their personal lives, and you get a rooting interest in them before they even make it to the doctor. And I think that's a big part of it also.
How did this series happen? How did you get in touch with not only Dr. Brad, but also the other podiatrist who is featured on the program?
Dr. Ebony. So, you know, TLC, like you said, TLC has been in the medical space for a long time. We've done a lot of shows from, you know, different disorders like hoarding to, you know, weight loss and obesity, like 600-pound life. And, you know, I think podiatry was on our radar for a long time, and it was just a matter of finding the right doctors. And once we did come across Dr. Brad, Dr. Ebony, you know, that was the piece that I think we were missing, and we took it from there.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Brad, when Mike and his production team invited you to be part of this series, what were your first thoughts about it?
At first, I was like, who's going to be interested in feet? You know, I find them interesting, you know, clearly. It's my profession. And I've seen all the beautiful and bizarre, you know, things that walk into my office every day. But at the end of the day, you know, I was like, I'm just going to, you know, really give this my all and hopefully make the most out of it and showcase what I do every day. And I was pretty shocked, you know, about the you know, the response for sure. And I think the way that the production team put it together, it's exactly like Mike said. You know, we're you know, doing kind of medical transformations for people, but it's not just about the foot deformity. We really dive into the person. And as a doctor, you never really see what they are dealing with at home. You know, so it's been amazing to watch just, you know, the befores and the afters of how they are walking around their house or their job and the struggles that they deal with on a basis. So it's been truly uplifting for me to just, you know, see a different side of this. And the production team and TLC have put that together for everyone. So I'm super humbled by it too. It's been great, man.
Yeah. When people come to you or Dr. Ebony, do they consider you, the place of last resort?
It's a good question. With the success of the show and what we're putting out there, a lot of the issues that patients are dealing with are sometimes extreme. So a lot of people that are watching the show have really lost hope. And when we're able to finally help these people on the show, you know, there's a lot of patients that walk into my office and they're like, this show has finally brought some hope to me and my family's life that I could get back to the way I used to be. And that is honestly one of the best things that I've experienced. And I know Dr. Ebony feels the same way. It's good all ways around. So it's exciting.
Mike, when you decide what you're going to show viewers in a particular episode, how is it determined? What cases for both doctors do you, is there a barometer or some sort of chart that you follow in terms of figuring out what cases you will take on, what cases you will show, what assignments you'll give your production crew?
Sure, I think there are some parameters. I mean, we're probably not going to do something so small as athlete's foot or something like that. You know, it's got to be something that the viewers are going to find interesting and be able to take something away from. But, you know, we're also not just doing it just straight for shock value. Like we said, like there's a lot of things that go into it, including people's personal lives and, you know, can they communicate on camera and talk about what's wrong and show us these things and is there something unique about them? So there's a lot of different things that go into it. I don't think that there's ever a single formula. I think we try to keep it, you know, every case feeling as different as possible.
Once you take, same with you, Mike, once you take on a case or you film or tape a case, what kind mm-hmm. of production time do you do? What kind of advanced work do you do? How do you prep the camera work, the camera person, the sound person, et cetera, to document what happens, no matter what happens?
You mean like once they leave the doctor's office?
Right.
Or the surgery center?
Before the operation, whatever, is before the treatment is done, and you know, before, during, after.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, Brad can speak more to the medical piece of that and the healing times and all that stuff. You know, what we'll do is we'll shoot it in two or three stages so that, you know, we get to meet the person a little bit before their procedure in that background package that we talked about, and then we get to follow them to the doctor's office, and that's where we see Brad doing his consultation and ultimately the procedure that he does. And then we give them as much time as we can to go home, heal up, you know, go back and forth with their doctor, and then, you know, once they're in, and we'll kind of assemble the show at that point, leaving a little piece, you know, like a black hole in the show almost, so that we can go back and see them after their foot is healed up.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Baird, what kind of preparation do you go through on a particular case, again, before, during, after?
Oh, a ton. You know, once a patient, you know, is brought to our attention, you know, we have to make sure that the patient is a candidate. You know, A, for just say the show, or, you know, B, that, you know, we are able to help them and give them relief, a transformation, I mean, all of the above. So, you know, we dive into their medical history, their family history. We do a full workup, you know, just like you would, you know, as a patient walks in on their first visit. So that's really just the way we go about it. And then we go over a surgical plan if a surgery is needed on the patient. You know, it's obviously discussed internally, you know, amongst myself, my team, fellow doctors, and making sure we're doing the right thing across the board. There's a lot of, you know, awesome stuff that can be extreme, and there's, you know, smaller stuff too that we, you know, we like to showcase too. And Mike was saying, you know, we're not going to do athlete's foot or stuff like that, and that's right. And we're not just doing crazy, shocking stuff all the time. So, yeah, there's a lot that goes into each individual patient visit, you know, from day one until they leave on their final post-op.
And what kind of leeway does the production team have to film or tape what you do? Are there certain things you tell them, no, you cannot have, like, close-ups in this way on the operating table, or are there certain places you can't go? Or you have to, particularly since we've just gone through a pandemic, there are certain practices you have to do in terms of, like, say, wearing masks, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. We get asked about it a lot from a surgical standpoint. You know, having, you know, just say, you know, some cameras in an operating room with you, they all needed to be trained on how to gown, glove, you know, stand at a certain spot at a safe distance. You know, so there's, you know, no risk of infection. So everybody from the camera crew to, you know, the producer that's in there, everyone has been trained on proper OR etiquette. You know, depending on where we are in COVID, we've all worn masks and gotten tested before, after, during shows, shoots. So yeah, it was pretty intense during all that, but it's nothing that, any production team or movie set or whatever, you know, did not deal with, and, you know, we were very similar to that.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the TLC series, My Feet Are Killing Me, the latest episode of which, now in season three, is this Thursday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. It's also played elsewhere on TLC schedule, TLC available as, on cable and satellite, as well as the programming sometimes appears on Discovery Plus, the smart TV programming service from Warner Brothers Discovery. It's available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and in some cases, through your local cable operator. We're talking with two of the key people who make the program possible. Senior executive producer Mike Kane, he joins us live from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. And here in New York, we're joined by one of the two podiatrists that are featured regularly on the series, Dr. Brad Schaefer. If you have a question or comment for either or both, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. First of three episodes we're doing this week. We're also on Wednesday and Friday at this very hour, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. Coming up on Friday, we have at least a big hour for you to wrap up the month. We will have Kathy Robertson. If name's familiar, she was an actress. And for a couple of seasons, 1990, she was one of the featured players on Beverly Hills 90210, among other acting jobs on television and movies. Now she is the creator, producer, and showrunner of the new hit series on Roku, Swimming with Sharks, that's adapted from the 1990s movie starring Kevin Spacey. Kathy Robertson will be our lead guest. Also, from the popular syndicated weekend talk show Wake Up with Marcy, available on Hulu. Also here in New York on WLNY, Channel 1055 here in the New York metro area, and on other stations through syndication, the host executive producer, Marcy Hopkins. Also, that's all coming your way. That's 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, Wednesday and Friday, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Mike, how has the coronavirus pandemic impacted how you film or tape your series?
Well, Brad spoke to it a little bit there. You know, when it first hit, you know, we shut everything down, and it was particularly tough for our medical programming. And as Brad can attest to, we experimented with some telemedicine kind of stuff where the doctors from My Feet Are Killing Me met their patients over, you know, like a Zoom sort of technology, and did the first consultation that way. So that was something that we tried to get together pretty fast, and we were able to do it, having Brad shoot from home. And, you know, it was not ideal for us, but it was what we had to do at the time. And, you know, now that we would learn more about the virus and the precautions to take there, we've lightened up a little bit so that we're able to kind of go through those procedures that he talked about a little bit earlier.
Mm-hmm. Now, from episode to episode, you focus on one doctor or the other. Like an episode will focus primarily on Dr. Brad as opposed to an episode focusing primarily on Dr. Ebony, or do you try to, in an episode, have one case from each person?
So, yeah, so it started with Dr. Brad and Dr. Ebony, and then we also met Dr. Sarah, who works with Brad sometimes, Dr. Sarah Holler. So she's actually been incorporated into the show as well, and each doctor has one case per episode, so it's a pretty even balance, particularly this season. I think it's right down the line. One case per doctor, three cases per episode.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Brad, since the series has been on, do people – what is sort of the feeling or the attitude among people who watch the program about foot care and about how they treat their feet? Do they sort of see when they hear the title, My Feet Are Killing Me, that even though they might not have thought about it before, that you could have situations involving your feet that could be life-threatening?
Yeah, and, you know, with what we're showing, we're also talking about, you know, prevention and things that people need to do so they don't, you know, wind up on, you know, the doctor's table and with this type of, you know, medical issue that we sometimes showcase. But also, like I said before, you know, these patients are realizing that there is hope if, you know, unfortunately they do get to a point like this and they don't need to let it go anymore. So I'm happy with my practice. You know, we've seen a lot of patients come in, you know, after watching the show, and whether they have a smaller thing or a bigger thing, you know, feel a little more comfortable, you know, because, look, feet can sometimes be, you know, sometimes embarrassing to talk about. At least that's what we see or I hear about patients a lot. And you try to just give some sympathy and empathy and, you know, let someone know that we deal with this all day long. I mean, sometimes when I go to a doctor, you know, I'm embarrassed to talk about certain things, you know, and it's the same thing with feet.
How do you, Dr. Brad, try to, and also Dr. Ebony too, try to downplay the embarrassment, take the fear out, take the embarrassment out, take the awkwardness out of people?
Sure. I think just to, even with, you know, anything in life, you just try to be a little relatable, you know, show nice empathy that, you know, you're dealing with it or you've seen it a million times before. You know, if something's brought to your attention, you know, you don't roll your eyes or, you know, make a weird face. It all comes in, you know, your demeanor. And, you know, whether you're sitting in a restaurant and talking to a friend or, you know, you're sitting across from a patient, I think everyone deserves that respect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mike, when you deal with the patients here, how do you and your production crew try to ease their fear about being portrayed in a freak as freaks or foot freaks because of what they're dealing with?
Right. Well, I mean, hopefully at this point they've seen the show and then they know that we go to, you know, great lengths to make sure nobody feels like a freak, you know. And I think one of the things, and Brad touched on it a little bit, but, you know, there's this shame that came with feet, you know, and I think everybody experiences that, whether it's just, you know, odor or any condition that's gotten out of hand. And hopefully, it's, you know, people see more and more episodes, that becomes a little less and less. Because I think, you know, people have asked me before, like, is it hard to find people with foot conditions? It doesn't seem like it is. But the part that always surprises me is how long people wait. You know, it's like, how did it get to this point? Like, why would you not? And I think a lot of that is the embarrassment. So that's one of the things that, like, hopefully the show's kind of alleviating a little bit, is that embarrassment and that shame of having foot conditions, because, it, you know, it happens.
I totally
Mike,
agree.
Is there any way that, for the public to understand, you try to illustrate if there's a particular condition that's being highlighted here, to use, let's say, animation or graphics or charts that show the viewer what the doctor is dealing with and what the patient is dealing with, so they come to comprehend the situation much better?
Sure. And that's the first level of what the Brad and Ebony and Sarah do, is that, you know, they are so good at breaking this down, because, you know, we talk to doctors all the time that try to tell you what's wrong, and it's like, I can't understand a word you're saying because I didn't go to medical school. I have no idea what you're saying. So it's so important for the doctors to be able to break it down into layman's terms. And then from there, yes, yeah, so, you know, we've used x-rays. We've compared, you know, a healthy foot to the condition that you're looking at so you can see the difference. Some light graphics here and there. But it's not too graphic heavy, though. It's pretty easy to consume, for any viewer to watch.
Dr. Brad, what do you and Dr. Ebony do in terms of post-care or post-outreach or post-counseling?
Well, we're in touch with the patient pretty much around the clock. You know, they're able to reach us. We're very approachable when it comes to that. You know, post-op care for anybody. I know if I was having surgery, I would want the attention of my doctor. And, you know, when you're on a show like this, sometimes patients aren't necessarily right around the corner. You know, like if you wouldn't go and get, you know, your hand fixed or your knee fixed, you'd probably go to a doctor close to you. Sometimes patients come from, you know, a pretty good distance away. So, you know, we really try to get them the care that, you know, they deserve, whether it's coming to my office, you know, every couple days, or whether they need to be set up at home with visiting nursing or a doctor closer to them to change their dressings, take x-rays. You know, we really follow through to the very end, you know, and that's your final post-op visit.
We have a few more minutes with the folks behind My Feet Are Killing Me, which is on TLC, various time periods throughout the week, now in season number 3. I believe season 4 is starting in May. We'll check on that in a moment. But you can catch the next episode on Thursday night, 11 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on TLC, available on cable and satellite. Also, episodes, I believe, are running on Discovery Plus. That's the smart TV programming service from Warner Bros. Discovery, available on smart TV sets and smart devices, in some cases, your local cable operator. We've got senior executive producer Mike Kane, and we have one of the two doctors involved, Dr. Brad Schaefer. Dr. Schaefer is with us here in New York. Mike from Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. If you have a question or comment on our remaining moments with both men, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04Winning. Mike, how has the viewing attitude toward the series evolved over the seasons. What do you hear? What kind of feedback do you get now from the series from people watching that you didn't get at the start?
I think at the beginning there was definitely a curiosity to see how sensational it would be. You know, people were – it sounds crazy at first when you hear it, you know, and you know, we knew that going into it, but we banked on people coming and seeing it and saying, oh, wait, these guys really are making a TV show about, you know, real people going to seek, you know, real medical attention. So I think after a while, you know, that kind of sensationalist attitude has died down a little bit, and we're starting to get a little more I don't want to say respect, you know, but people understand that we're doing it for, you know, with the patient's best interest in mind.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Brad, what about you? How has, as the series evolved, how has the kind of reaction people have to you about what you're doing?
For a long time, I think, you know, podiatry, you know, just even the word, you know, you tell people what you do, and sometimes people don't exactly know what a podiatrist is, or they have a perception that a podiatrist just kind of does routine basic stuff. I think it's been great for, you know, myself and our profession, podiatry, to really showcase what we do, what we're trained to do. And we do a ton of surgical, you know, stuff, and it doesn't require, you know, going to, you know, an orthopedic surgeon, which are fantastic doctors, you know, very much, but we do the same type of stuff with anything below the knee. We go to schooling for it. We're trained in extensive residency programs. We do everything from traumatic injuries to, you know, basic forefoot stuff, bunions, hammer toes, you know, to just everyday routine stuff like fungal issues or warts. You know, so there's a lot of things that we treat, and it's fun and also exciting to finally showcase everything that podiatry can do.
Mike, what is the status of the series? My understanding was that it is going into a fourth season, and it may be starting next month.
May 4th, we have a new season coming out. We have all new episodes coming out, 9 p.m. It's Wednesday nights. Very excited to have it back on the air. It's been down for almost 8 months, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that your organization, Renegade Productions, does a lot of work in the area of unscripted television. What else is coming down the pike from Renegade?
From Renegade on TLC, that's the show. That's our partnership. That's what we do. I would have to let them speak to shows that are airing on other networks, other projects. I'm pretty much working directly with the team that works on My Feet Are Killing Me.
And when it comes to season four, what Dr. Brad, what can we expect? What are some of the situations you're dealing with?
Probably just more, more and more and more. We're trying to up the game in every facet. You know, Mike was talking about, you know, what we do best. It's not just shock and awe. You know, sometimes that's warranted depending on the patient. But, you know, we really dive into the lives, the patient lives, the transformations that we give just, you know, from a foot standpoint and a life standpoint. So I know I've learned, you know, more each season about, you know, each patient, just hearing their backstories and, you know, some of the shame and embarrassment that they have, and just being able to alleviate that, you know, and showcase a different story every episode is just extremely important. You know, Dr. Ebony, Dr. Sarah, myself, you know, we really dive into the patient's lives and to see that transformation at the end of the day. And at the end of the day for me is even just watching it on TV. So May 4th, watching it at 9 p.m. is going to be exciting to see how the patient, you know, is before they see me and after they see me and the, you know, how I've helped them. You know, you don't always see that at home, take home as a doctor. You know, sometimes a patient leaves, you know, and they feel better, but you don't really have a great follow-up because they're better, you know, and it's nice seeing them from a home standpoint.
You can find My Feet Are Killing Me on TLC. The latest season 3 episode will be this Thursday night, 11 p.m. Pacific time. And season 4 will begin on May 4th. That's Wednesday night. That's Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time on TLC. Check your local listings for where TLC is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to TLC.com. And don't forget, a lot of TLC programming is also presented on Discovery Plus. That's the programming service from Warner Brothers Discovery, available on smart TV sets and devices, and in some cases, through your local cable operator. My Feet Are Killing Me, beginning a new season, number 4. That's May 4th, Wednesday, next Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Mike Kane, the senior executive producer, Dr. Brad Schaefer, one of the podiatrists profile on the series. Thank you both very much for joining us. Congratulations on the great work you're both doing, and hopefully another great season and more ahead.
Great. Thanks, Simon.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
You're very, very welcome, Mike. And
thank
Dr.
you.
Brad, take care. All the greatest.
All right, guys.
All right, guys.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Mike Kane, senior executive producer of My Feet Are Killing Me, joining us from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., and Dr. Brad Schaefer, one of the podiatrists profiled here in New York. One more time, let's give you our classic trivia question of the week. Binge Time, the brand new book by Dawn Chalewski and Dade Hayes, two great journalists covering the world of television, is yours if you know the answer to this question. What was the first series starring Robert Conrad? What was Robert Conrad's first television series? You know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. And don't forget, if you've already won, you're not eligible. Make sure when you put your entry in, you include your name and your mailing address. And we want to thank all of our guests for being with us today, all of you for tuning in. Next episode, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, our special one on Wednesday. And among our time, we will be spending with Jason Fairchild, the co-founder and chief executive officer of TV Scientific. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And check out our podcast, any of our episodes this month and previous months. You'll find it at iTunes, at Apple TV, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the iRadio Podcast Network, and many other podcast sites. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our show today? And what's your thoughts about where TV's at and where it's going? You can email me. Also find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. However you respond, we respond back in 24 hours or less because what you say matters. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They're not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio and those of business programs. Andy Toews, BeachArt General Manager. Dave Sonnenberg, Head of Content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Ernest new podcast outpost. For details, go to onpodium.com. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. Tomorrow Televised brought to you by Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. To listen to all the good stuff, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Monday. Back on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our podcast destinations. Whatever you're up to now and then, please make it safe and great. And, of course, if you haven't been vaccinated, see your doctor. Get caught up on your medical situation. Find out about all the treatments, including those pills from Merck and Pfizer, that can make a difference for you if you do get the virus. And then make a choice, a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.